another special meeting, otherwise known as a workshop with regard to the first component. The San Juan Island Public Hospital District Number 1. Today's date is Wednesday, October 16th. It is 2 p.m. And we are assembling at the Frank Wilson EMS building here in Friday Harbor. One comment, yet again, is no public comment. Goes in a circle, doesn't it? Except I have asked Dr. Lauren Johnson, who's a retired ER physician, to attend a second component of today's meeting, and that is a presentation by Primera LifeWise representatives. And one of the particular topics of concern for the PHG board, as I see it, is air medical transport and the difficulties we've had with the predecessor to LifeWise in terms of insurance carriers. So the first order of business is reopening the discussion discrete to the ILA. And bless you. Section 6.1, and we'll take your lead, Dr. Appleton.
Did we start stand all last night?
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
Okay, that's where I left off. I don't have a lead.
6.1, 6.4.
If the appropriate insurance, although the appropriate would be as determined by our insurance broker looking at the program. I mean, that's the word appropriate. How do you know what's appropriate?
Basically, the insurance broker is the one who suggests, you know, policy limits.
So should we put that in as determined by our insurance broker? I don't know.
Do we think it's necessary?
Because appropriate is a standard. You know, it's a measurement of a standard. Who sets the standard?
And again, we defer to the expert, you know, which is the provider.
As?
Well, you could say something like, typically, our insurance broker, something like that.
As determined by our insurance broker.
Well, it would have to be for both sides. Each party should maintain. Well, so our insurance broker can't dictate their insurance policy.
Okay. As each party's insurance broker?
Sure.
Yeah.
Does that allow them to upsell us on insurance?
No, there's nothing precluding getting multiple bids. You're not married to one singular insurance broker.
Okay. I assume that Carl and I are allowed to participate like last time, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
As determined by each party's.
We get a lot of good out of the word appropriate. Maybe we should just leave it in.
That's fine.
Current appropriate insurance levels as determined by each party's insurance broker.
Okay.
Insurance levels as.
Okay, I got that.
Thank you, Nathan.
Is about if something happens.
Untoward happens.
Yes. And this has no reflection on the chief. I hold him in the highest esteem, but it leads me to think that, you know, within the termination clauses, we've got 90 days. Like, if there's an incident, then we have 90 days before we can terminate this employee.
It's not necessarily following an incident at all.
If there is an incident, you can get out of it because, I mean, if there's something untoward, it says unless either party agrees. So if both parties agree to get out of it, which would indicate there would be an incident, and both parties would say we have to.
But say they don't agree. I mean, that's the thing that I'm worried about. I think about just you know, my liability as an employer and protecting the staff here, like if something happened, I don't, you know, we, it doesn't give us any protection or control against that kind of liability.
I think that's what the whole term was.
Right, but you're saying that I have to have both agencies agree. So, I mean,
it says, to the extent permitted by law, each party agrees to hold harmless the other party.
Mm-hmm. No, but what you're saying is then in this, in order to terminate ahead of 90 days, both parties have to agree.
But those are two, I think those are two
separate
subjects.
I think they're confusing, yeah.
Well, you know, it just makes me wonder, like, you know, there isn't really, I mean, any party can cancel the contract within 90 days, but is there a without cause termination and that's beyond this hold harmless?
Well, that would be back in the termination.
Right.
Separate from the hold harmless.
Right, but it says still 6 months within the wind up.
Well, but
period.
Again, no, you know, we should. One of the things that we're referring to a draft that was generated last Friday, and I think the consensus was, well, it hasn't been officially struck,
right.
But the consensus was that we're going to adopt a 90-day proviso without cause.
Okay.
That has yet to be put in writing.
No, I have that in my notes.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, 90 days, and we've had an incident. Why am I waiting 90 days? Do you see what I mean? Like,
no, I don't.
Okay.
Do you understand her, Warren? You're the leading man.
Well,
okay.
Here's what I think you just said. Mm-hmm. If an incident happens,
mm-hmm.
and it's of such a degree, I'm not trying to make a sentence,
right.
of such a degree that one party would say that's just way too much or way over the
right.
top.
Done.
Why should you have to wait 90 days?
Right.
As opposed to 2 weeks.
Or right then.
Well, yeah. You have to gather both sides of the story. You know,
sure.
you, someone comes up and says, so-and-so did this, you know, you said it. There's always two uh-huh. sides to the story, but I think two weeks is plenty of time to have it, an evaluation or investigation, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But 90 days seems like the other employers are looking at you and saying, well,
I know.
There's
that's
3 months
I,
now, and that happened.
What
are they doing?
About.
What are they doing? And I see you don't want to lock yourself in to the 90 days. You could take 90 days, but you could take 2 weeks if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so say a terrible, horrific incident happened, and obviously you said, you know, there are two sides to it, so there's a defense and the accusers, and the end point of that investigation is, yeah, the individual is culpable of criminal act, just for instance.
Yeah.
Then all it would take is both sides to say, listen, you know, Mary Jane is fired, and we're going to dissolve this contract because we're lacking XYZ personnel. If it's a key individual.
But see, the problem is that it's both sides. So then again, it doesn't really leave us with any jurisdiction, yet we retain this liability.
But all contracts have a term. I mean, you can't write up a contract and say, if something untoward happens, this doesn't apply. I mean, you have a term of the contract. I mean, you can't have a contract without a term. So I guess I don't understand that part. How you, okay, this is a contract, it's a 2-year contract, and you have the termination clauses, and you have the breach, and you have all those other things, but then you're going to say, well, and if something untoward happens, then we can get out of it. That wouldn't be a contract then.
Yes, it would.
Sure.
Well, you wouldn't have a term on it, though.
Yes, you have the term, but if this particular event happens, you can get out of it.
And then how do you define the event? That's what I'm asking. So we say if an untoward event happens or an emergency event or something, are we going to define all of those possible events?
No, certainly not. But
no. But then how would you decide legally from a contract standpoint what the event is?
How are you deciding at 90 days?
No, I'm not saying days. I'm saying event. That's what
so again,
you're saying at 90 days. So that sentence should have something
it's
about
totally
the
different.
Two different things
two different.
Here.
So, again, it's just a very specific legal question. I think we ought to, you know, ask Richard Davis what his opinion is. The concept, I think, the board has a pretty good grasp on. Do you, Nathan?
I don't. I still don't. I mean, it's Sorry. I mean, what are you going to ask him?
I apologize, too. I'm not exactly sure. I'm following. Are we talking about Section 4 termination, or are we talking about Section 6?
Well, it's just, I just said that we were, you know, we were talking about this hold harmless, and it made me think back to Section 4.
Okay.
And, you know, what we had agreed on the other day was, or what we had talked about, was adjusting this, because the way it's written, it said that the agreement was 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And
we change it to 6 and then followed by a 6.
And then a 6-month wind-up period. But any party may cancel the contract within 90 days. So 90 days without cause. But we're talking about not specifically the contract, but about termination of an individual. And if we find that we're in a situation, you know, is this telling me that I have to wait 90 days?
No, not at all. Termination of an individual. In other words, if Carl...
But I'm talking about this specific situation. So,
now let me explain.
Okay.
So, my understanding is the contract does not in any way change the relationship between the PhD Board of Commissioners and Carl as interim chief under the wing of his contract. So that is intact. So if Carl screws up in an egregious way, say in a criminal way, for
but
instance,
I'm not talking about Carl.
I'm using him as an example.
Okay.
You mentioned employee. He's the only one I can pick on. Now, I mean, I can pick on Nathan, but...
Goody. Oh.
So the point is, you know, if you screw up,
mm-hmm.
then the board can fire you. You're an at-will employee. You can be fired yesterday, almost.
Right.
Okay.
And so that clarifies that, I think, I hope.
Yeah.
But Norton's not an employee.
Right.
No, that's correct.
So
we can...
But we could petition the fire department three board of commissioners to do likewise. But again, that's their judgment. Norman Collins is the employee of Fire District 3 Board of Commissioners, not us.
And so
in other words, if
that's the fundamental problem. Mm-hmm. I think.
Well, maybe it's not fire, but remove.
Right.
As
we can't fire him, but we can remove him from the position.
Oversight.
Exactly. You know, the oversight position.
Well,
sure,
well of course.
Right, but
stop the contract.
So has that become material breach and covered under
material
breach?
That becomes material breach.
Which takes me how long?
I think material breach was just like.
That's like if you do something
done
wrong,
deal.
It's
like,
done.
Mm-hmm.
If it's negligent or intentional acts or omissions.
So 3.2.
Well, 6.4 is the hold harmless.
3.2
talks about material breach. Is 3. Okay, sorry.
So where are we now?
And we changed. We suggested 3.2. We've suggested changes of that. Also, which.
So you know, the material breach gives us 6-month wind up period, which means to try to untangle things and put everything back the way it was. I think that are we able to negate the contract and then we have to give 6 months to unwind things? Material breach terminates the contract,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
But it takes 6 months.
But it takes 6 months, not necessarily to remove the contract, but just to let everybody put the pieces back into place.
Yeah, it's two separate.
To
things.
Reestablish your
yes.
normal
reestablish
usual.
The
so the contract
the
ends,
operation.
But then we have to get out of everything. And I think we suggested changing this anyway.
Yeah,
because we had Nathan talk to Richard about it, didn't we?
No, we talked to Richard about it, and
the wind-up period. I mean,
God, I hate that term.
I know, but that's what we talked.
So you're
talking
about the dissolution of the contract efforts decided by one party that they went in the contract, then you have putting things back together. Is that correct?
Oh, what the definition of a wind-up?
Yes,
that's my understanding.
Okay.
Yes.
So, if, you know, one of the considerations, since this is not a full-blown agreement, full amalgamation or consolidation between the two entities, no transfer of capital assets, no selling of the building, blah, 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 that should be reduced from 6 months.
That potential was there because in our conversations with Richard, again, he was saying in terms of financial...
It's an easier dissolution.
It unwinds or winds down, up, sideways, unwinds more quickly because there's very little in terms of monetary or material assets being transferred, because we're not transferring over any material assets.
So the thought was 30 days, 30 to 45 days
possibly,
to do that,
yeah,
versus 6 months. Specific to this administrative
location. But does that go to answer your question?
Did we talk about that?
Yes.
I thought so.
So help me understand your concern.
So my concern is yes, this is a service contract, essentially. And so what that does is it brings in an individual mm-hmm. into our agency.
No, not into our agency. He's totally separate.
Well, he'll be working here and overseeing the employees and operations.
No.
He doesn't oversee operations.
He doesn't oversee operations. I think the confusion still lies in the type of contract.
I think we need to back up just a little bit because, yes, on Monday, the board asked me to talk to Richard Davis, our legal counsel, about whether Chief Collins was a contractor, an employee, a consultant, whatever, and there was some uncertainty about the exact relationship between us and Chief Collins in a legal sense, which is really the core of what Commissioner Lindstrom is concerned about. Mm-hmm. And we did get some guidance on that, and so I think it's fair to talk about that guidance and then address her concern again and see if the situation has improved. Does that seem fair? Because she did not hear that conversation, and so we should talk about that.
Sure.
Okay. Do you have a clear recollection of that, Carl?
Well, yeah, that was part of the concern. You know, we wanted to make sure that it was very clear that our contract was with the fire district mm-hmm. and not with any particular individual. Mm-hmm. Whoever the fire district determines to be, and let's be real about this, it's going to be Chief Collins mm-hmm. as to fulfill that function for the fire district. So he stays as a fire district employee. Mm-hmm. The question then kind of said, all right, well, what happens to Carl? Okay, so that I think we've answered through Richard, some help with Richard, is that my contract as interim chief for EMS stays in place. All the duties that are assigned to me stay in place. That also takes some of the question out of the union contract and the terms of that contract because nothing changes.
Right.
What we're actually contracting then for is this this oversight, an assistance in directing policy and procedure, an assistance in coordinating finances, the kinds of things that will help the ultimate integration handle smoothly. So that we addressed with a new draft of Exhibit A, which is basically the duties of the oversight, what's the term we're using, the EMS oversight administrator. Mm-hmm. So those duties are defined much more succinctly, I believe, in this one and without the overlap. Because in the original draft, they said, well, Carl, what do you do? So I kind of supplied my job description and that was taken part, you know, just completely and said, well, that's what this new oversight person would do. And we realized that's incorrect because we have two different independent governmental agencies that have all the control in terms of policy, finances, all that. My contract's with you. As we're dealing with the employees, that stays my responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a coordination effort with whoever the fire department deems as the oversight administrator. Does that help?
Yes, and I appreciate that. However, it's not really the crux of my question.
Okay.
And so, and my concern. So, for instance, what I'm saying here mm-hmm. is, hypothetically, you are our employee, mm-hmm. and if you gave directions to a paramedic or an EMT that ended up being harmful, and we needed to investigate that or whatever, we could put you on leave while that happened. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, hypothetically, you were accused of sexual assault, whatever. We could terminate, we could investigate, and we could terminate your contract as an employee. So what I'm saying here is that this is a contract for administrative services, but you're still integrating an employee, as a person, into this agency that I don't have oversight over, and yet the actions in healthcare and in whatever way, the public hospital district is still liable for those things as long as we have oversight over EMS. That's my problem.
And I think, though, that we've got that covered because there's a layer of insulation in there. And that, as we work together...
The whole harmless
and the fact as we work together, if there's some sort of fundamental difference, mm-hmm. that I, as representing the hospital district, mm-hmm. have with the oversight person, mm-hmm. say, I'm not buying that. There's that insulating layer. I can come back and I can say, I need to talk this over with my board because I think they're not gonna like that. Conversely, if there's a question that you have about how we're coordinating things, mm-hmm. I can say, okay, now under the terms of this ILA, let me talk with our oversight person and see if this fits into the big picture plan. So I think there's an insulation layer in there by maintaining that.
But what I'm saying is that we can't just stop it if there is a problem.
We can if there's a material. So yeah, I think.
But we have to have both sides agree to it.
No, maybe what you're saying is if he does something egregious, mm-hmm. I mean, if Chief Fong does something, and we want to terminate this, that if that is covered in this agreement, and that we can get out of it. I mean, he's doing something, so that's the whole, hold harmless, but there was also something else in there where, I can't remember what it is. But if he does something, then that ends this contract.
Where is that?
It's in the...
Is it the material breach?
It's the material breach, and it's a combination of material breach and hold harmless. So, there's a material breach again. And unfortunately, we don't have the current, I mean, we need to make sure that we're comfortable with that material breach because we don't have that current changes that we all suggested in this draft because it was too difficult to have 49 different drafts running around.
Yeah, I didn't want to confuse things. Yeah. One thing Richard did say, though, is if you want to change the term wind up, you can. It's not, as he put it, a term of art, so you can change that if you want.
And I would make sure that if there is a material breach, then of course we're holding everybody harmless, but we can get out of the contract. And if that isn't clearly stated in here, because that is the idea behind it, then, I mean, if he does something so egregious, the contract is null and void. And so if the wording isn't proper from a legal standpoint, we need to make sure it is.
Well, the problem with the material breach is there's the ability to cure.
Right, which is
but
good.
But some actions, their impact on the whole dynamic of the organization is such that there's no real cure.
Well, and if there's no cure, it doesn't get done.
Well, then you had that 6 months. Well, is there a cure? Not a cure. That's a dead. So then you're back to arguing.
So I see where you're coming from. You're saying, all right, if we say there's a material breach, and we have the wind up period, what? I don't think we have a good definition of what ends the contract.
Right.
What terminates? You know what? What part of the material breach terminates the contract, which then allows for the wind up down period?
And so that,
see what I mean?
It's like, why is it 6 months?
Again,
if we've made a decision that we don't want it.
Again, it was to unravel what's been done, to put everything back into place. But to go with that is, I believe what Nathan was referring to earlier is because there is not much in the way of financial or material goods, mm-hmm. Rolling stock, you know, equipment, none of that's changing hands. That wind up period can be much shorter.
It should be.
Well, and I think we suggested that last time.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
Wanted it less than 6 months.
When you say much shorter, what?
I don't know. What's what do you think's appropriate? Maybe theirs are 90 days. I mean, that would allow the cure.
I mean, if there's really little to wind down.
We're not transferring assets, so it should
right.
be
maybe
very
that's
simple.
Something. Maybe we can bounce that off of Richard as well to say what would
45
days.
Split the 90 in half. 45 days.
Yeah, it's a board decision. I mean, you guys just have to decide what you want to do, and we'll make it happen.
Well, it's a question we can pose off of council. You know, he's written a gajillion of these ILAs for other fire and rescue and EMS entities. Let's see what's usual and customary.
Because I do remember him saying that specifically.
That what?
And that the wind-up period can be shorter because he foresees that the financial entanglements aren't there.
They're pretty nominal.
I had mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Right, as opposed to 6 months, correct.
Yeah, last time we did ask for that change to be included in here.
Do you recall what that was named?
So.
To my recollection, I've not been particularly involved in this process until you guys asked me to talk to Richard the other day. But my understanding is that the length of the wind-up period is just a board decision, and fire has to agree as well. You just have to, both sides have to agree.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I don't, we can ask Richard, but that's what he's going to say, is that you just have to decide what
you
want.
The other thing
you
do is put it in there, and if fire, when they review this, want 5 years, they'll counter offer. You know, whatever. I'm just being absurd to damage to it.
Yeah. But ultimately, everything's a board decision, whether it's a PhD board or Fire District 3's board. That's not the point. The point is we have legal counsel on purpose, and that is to reflect his experience in running Lycon ILAs. And that's all I ask you to pursue. And if he suggests that we should, you know, put some credence to his suggestion. Now, if we disagree, fine and dandy. If collectively we decide, you know, 6 weeks or 2 weeks or a month or whatever, well, so be it. And again, as Warren says, if Fire District 3 feels likewise, then good. That's what we want. We want a consensus of opinion on both sides.
And as a negotiating thing, I'd make it shorter. So if they want it longer, they have to ask for it. It's just a standard getting to yes negotiating technique out of Harvard. That's the way
see,
it is.
Can check it out.
Can you suggest a number, and then we can take it to Richard and see if he has objections?
1,012 days.
45 days.
Well, that's what Rebecca said.
So yeah,
we have
45
we have
days.
Two people saying the same thing.
Sounds good.
Bounce it off of them.
Okay.
Okay,
we're back to 6-4. We never got off of it.
It's
still, you know, this is still not sitting well with me for multiple reasons, but for this one in particular.
Are we back with the whole, we're back on?
No, it's just that, you know, I mean, this is an employee, essentially. We're bringing him on for management services, and, you know, there's not a without cause termination. I mean, there are things, there, yeah, this is not an employee contract, and that's where I think it gets very confusing. And in terms of the board's ability to have oversight, it's challenging. So, but we can move on.
Well, wait a minute. Before we move on, I think he's not an employee. He's a contractor. So
right. That's
that's one difference. But mm-hmm. We also did say one of the changes was last time we suggested that we do change that and make it 90 days and make it without cause, and you're saying it isn't still in there. Well, it isn't because we haven't updated it.
Yeah.
So we are suggesting that, whether, I mean, and then it'll come back to us and we, you know, decide, but that was a suggestion that we all kind of
Well, it was consensus, I think, at the last workshop, just 2 days ago, but also at least two of the commissioners to be. Voice the same thing, so I think that's great.
And I'm going to take nits, but I think we are contracting for services.
Yes.
Correct.
Whereas, you know, really, we're asking the fire district to determine who provides those services. We all know that it is, you know, Collins. because he's the most appropriate person to provide that oversight. Mm-hmm. But in technical terms, it's not an employee contract.
You can just see my concern. As the sole remaining commissioner, as we move forward, I'm concerned about liability and, I'm concerned about annexation not happening. I'm concerned about levies not passing. So, but here we are. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Well, things are at least a little clearer.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
So, Warren, we've been following your lead, so to speak. You want to continue, sir?
I'm ready to give up the lead for a while.
The whole harmless and parties, that all comes directly from the attorney.
What are you on, 6-4?
Mm-hmm. 6-4.
You mean the parties acknowledge and agree, starting with that paragraph?
Mm-hmm. Well, starting with whole harmless.
And do we know what the law is to the extent permitted by law?
It's
that's a dynamic. What's the law today? Tomorrow might well be different. So you have to be current in your application of the law. So that's an unknown looking forward.
Title 51 RCW is?
Okay, in the fourth line under 6-4, out of the negligent and intentional act, it should be out of the negligent and or. You can have an intentional act, it's not negligent. You can have a negligent act of such grossness, but here it says you have to have both. And if that is directly out of the attorney's bailiwick in his computer, we should inform him that we don't agree with that. That it should be and or omissions of such parties, officers, officials, employees, and volunteers in connection with the performance of this agreement.
You got that, I presume, right, Nathan?
I'm having trouble figuring out. You're in what's labeled 6-4 under old harmless, right?
Down. The line reads arising out of the negligent
and
Warren added
or
on the and.
Right here, is this it?
Yeah. And or intentional.
Negligent and or.
Okay. All right, I've added it.
Thank you, sir.
Contract is a meeting of the minds. And that second paragraph in 6-4 is attorney speak. And we've had trouble just now getting a meeting in minds over the first paragraph. I would like to have, before we go into the final draft before a vote, an example from Richard Davis to the extent permitted by law, from any and all claims costs, including reasonable attorney fees and expert witness fees, losses and judgments arising out of the negligent and intentional and or. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong paragraph. Too many paragraphs.
Starts with
the parties acknowledge that, when he had the double agent talking about us there and fire there all in one sentence, it gets confusing about who you're talking about. So it's hard to understand exactly what it means. The parties acknowledge and agree of such claims, actions, lawsuits, suits, liability, loss, cost, and expenses, and damages are caused by or result from the concurrent negligence of the hospital district, its agent employees and officers, and the fire district. So we're together.
And or, it says, officers and the fire district. If it's a result from the concurrent negligence of the hospital district and or fire district.
And or officers.
Yes.
Are the fire district its agents, employees,
and or officers, and. But it says and or officers and the fire district, its agent. So it's the concurrence of...
Oh, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's so the concurrence.
We've got hospital district and then three different examples, agents, employees, and or officers. And the fire district and its agents, employees,
or and should, or officers. Does it say between or can...
No, they're separate entities, and they're basically saying agents, employees, and or officers. And likewise for the fire district, it's agents, employees, and or officers. So they're independent.
But I think, Warren, are you asking that
independent concurrent is not an independent word. Concurrent is...
Are you saying that we need to have damages that occur from both sides simultaneously? Is that what you're asking?
That doesn't make sense.
With the and?
Some people have one interpretation of it, others have another. That is not what you want in a contract. That's why you drop a contract, you have it. You both agree what the words say, so and that is a run-on sentence with lots of clauses. Line?
So what do you accept?
It's only five lines long. I mean, come on.
What do you propose?
Well, I think Warren makes a good point there, you know, the use of the word concurrent. That means both parties are simultaneously, being guilty of malfeasance. So we need an explanation from counsel.
Well, it also says negligence of each party. Like, why does it have to be each party?
See what we're doing?
One party.
We're trying to do the attorney's work of making this easy for us to understand. That's what we're doing here right now.
Isn't that always the case, Warren? I mean,
I would be happy to do this if I was making whatever he's making an hour right at the moment. But I mean, that's what we have this guy for.
But legally, that's by definition.
And he's the one that's going to have to unravel it at the other end. And I don't understand what he's unraveling. And I read that several times last night, maybe too late at night.
Well, Nathan, why don't we ask Nathan to put that on the list to ask Richard if he can clarify that?
Or put it in layman language. I mean, don't mind, but also scrutinize the use of the term concurrent, as I said before. It shouldn't be hard to sort out. But unfortunately, you know, contracts typically, particularly for public entities, are crafted by attorneys. And they run, you know, five-line sentences routinely. So it's always, it trips up the layperson. And four of us are laypeople.
Yeah, and instead of this indemnification section, although hold harmless is a form of indemnification, we're in an old hold harmless paragraph. So I would suggest that instead of indemnification, it can apply. There might be other forms. You just do the hold harmless there. But I would let Richard chime in on that. We need it clearer so each side knows who they are without a run-on sentence.
Well, remember that this draft has been reviewed by Fire 3's counsel too, Joe Quinn. So we're basically...
Well, they probably understand it between them, but the contract is between us and them, not between their attorneys, and we have to understand what we're contracting to. That's the point.
Well, we're asking for clarification.
Yeah.
And again, there's a consensus between Joe Quinn and Richard Davis, and that says something in and of itself in my book. So, but, if we can make it easier to understand, as we did, I think, in a substantial way with Exhibit A, then that's our task to do that.
I will check on the meaning of concurrent and talk to them to make sure that these two clauses, one referring to the hospital district, one referring to the fire district, are clearly separate. That's the two questions for this paragraph, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, now to dispute resolution.
That's pretty standard.
Well, I was going to say mediation is like, there's a little plagiarism going on here, I think. As well, 7-2, binding arbitration. So, Warren, as an attorney, do you have any pickups with 7-1, 7-2 of your...
No.
And 8. So,
what? Okay.
Any other comments? Dr. Schwing?
No.
Annalisa? Rebecca?
No.
Dr. Appleton?
On which one? Up to?
Anything.
On miscellaneous provisions?
No, up to that.
Up to that?
No, to the draft as written.
Not at the moment.
Okay.
I got to see when it comes back to see if I understand that. Hopefully, we're getting closer, but we're not on target yet.
Very good. So as I mentioned earlier, I think Nathan mentioned earlier that Exhibit A has been markedly changed.
Yeah, there's a big formatting issue on page four where there's just a big white space. And that's just because, you know, you're seeing the document without the red lines, but the document itself has red lines. And some of that spacing stuff you can't fix.
Thanks, Rebecca.
So apologies for that. But it will be fixed.
So the miscellaneous provisions, the noticing procedures are pretty straightforward.
Just don't move.
Oh, it says, or other addresses.
Yeah.
It does give you that out.
And what does, Rebecca?
It does give you the out to change addresses.
Oh, really?
And we should change EMSs because we're asking them to contact the hospital district secretary. But the P.O. box is no longer at the EMS building, which is what's given. The PhD has a different.
Yeah, what is your P.O. box?
It's still 370.
It's 370, okay. But the physical address is no longer 1079 Springs.
That's true. We're 849.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good call.
Yeah, good catch.
Didn't recognize the P.O. box, but I recognized the physical.
Yeah.
That one I know.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We need to put the galaxy in there too.
I'm sorry?
The galaxy.
So we have.
Okay, the rest of this. Yeah, it's all legalese.
A2, A3, A4, A5, any.
Well, let's ask Warren. Warren's in turn.
I went to law school. I dropped by Bar Association in 2010.
It's a relative thing, Warren. We have a heck of a lot more legal education than
we
do,
Warren.
Collectively, so go for it.
I have a pithy comment on A3 in the current political spectrum.
So obviously we've got some formatting things.
On the severability one,
A5 doesn't exist.
Draws in the issue of major and minor breach. And there's two different types. Minor breach is you can cure it and get over it. Major breach is it's uncurable, basically. I mean, long definition, you know, lots of verbiage and argument, but there's minor and major breaches. And the severability, and I actually asked for the one out of the PIMC, the Peace Health
Subsidy Agreement.
Public Hospital District Supplemental Agreement that, was it Foster Pepper?
Yes, correct.
47 pages long or something. And I asked that to be put in there for discussion, which is, since this is a very limited contract, any breach would probably taint, either negate and taint the whole contract. And therefore, the reason I put that one in, I wanted that one in, is because then it puts both parties back on equal footing and they have to renegotiate. One, renegotiate that, whatever the breach, whatever that was, and the terms around it to make sure it doesn't happen again and to solidify the issues. That's why I wanted the one from the Peace Health, which I thought was well written. It's, you know,
it's only, well, it would be viable in the first 45, 60, 70, whatever those days are going to end up, that we just had that discussion. But it puts the onus on both parties to come in with a different attitude to renegotiate everything. So that's the one I want.
So I'm a little confused, because the 8.4...
Severability, right.
Severability reads, it just reads, in case...
But it talks about, and the agreement shall be construed if such invalid, illegal, or unenforceable prison had never been contained. But it says, that okay. On the top, it says that you can divide that out and keep the contract going.
I don't have those words. I have, on the 10th, I have... It says severability, in case any one or more of the provisions contained in this agreement shall for any reason be held invalid, illegal, or unenforceable in any respect, such invalidity, illegality, or unenforceability shall not affect any other provision hereof. That's what I have in here.
Right. So, and the one I asked to be put in, and I don't have a copy of it right here, was the one that I should have brought it. Well, I should have brought the contract and just read it out.
We did ask Richard that, and he came back in his letter when you...
Yes, right. Right. I read this letter.
It said, this is unusual language. I can't imagine what part of this agreement would conflict with applicable law, but to the extent it did, then the legal remedy is not to throw out the entire agreement, rather to sever that from the agreement and to leave the rest intact. Suggested language for this purpose is as follows. And I think that's what he added. So you're saying
my suggestion
you still don't
is
like
whatever
that.
Paragraph that was, and I can tell you right where it's sitting on my workbench at home with the tag in it, was in the Peace Health PhD agreement, a 50-year contract, 47 pages by one of the great law firms in town. And if Richard finds that that's abnormal, why is it in that agreement? There's an issue there between Foster Pepper and Richard. My view is the one that's in the Peace Health contract gives an appropriate amount of power to the party that's been breached to then bring the conversation totally back and not be arguing about this, whether it's this little piece or that little piece. You just come back and in good faith, and I had that written in there, and in good faith, you renegotiate.
And I am unfamiliar with that contract. How does it compare the severability clause? I mean, even just in terms of length,
it's about the same, maybe one sentence shorter.
Is that your 7.3?
Which one are you on?
The one that you changed, all of your changes, all of your edits.
I don't have a 7.3 on mine.
She's talking about
the date.
I'm talking about your original edits to the original contract. Oh. And that was what you got this out of.
I have to find that.
Okay, here. You can just look at mine.
Let me see if I have it right here, and then we can all read it together.
I didn't bring copies of that this time. I brought them last on Monday.
Where?
7.3, is that what you're talking about?
Correct.
Okay. So
that's the one out of
Peace Health.
I think that is. This is the Jeopardy Clause, 7.4. is the Jeopardy Clause on the Peace Health. It says it right here in the column.
Okay.
And a Jeopardy Clause is a very standard clause in contracts. That's why it's called the Jeopardy Clause, because if you say Jeopardy Clause, the contract student will say, party, first part, second part, done. That's what a Jeopardy Clause is, and it says if either party of the agreement should be determined by a state or federal court or governmental agency or to be in violation of any statute ordinance, to be otherwise deemed illegal, the Jeopardy event, then the parties shall use their best efforts to meet and attempt to negotiate.
So that's the one that you want put in instead of the severability or in addition to the severability?
In addition to.
Thank you. Okay. So Nathan, can you add, so in addition to the severability, which is 8.4. Can you ask Richard if he would put in Warren's original 7.4? If there's anything wrong with adding that to
that. And Nathan, I'll bring you the other contract, because I have it marked, I can find it. So that you can get the, but I think those are the exact words, but I, without doing this, I couldn't tell you for sure right now.
Sure.
So
before, we've had a lot of contracts going back and forth.
Before Nathan, before you address that, that consideration with Richard Davis, Warren, could you consent to make sure that you have
the right words,
the gold standard on your bench? Okay.
Is this yours? Do I have yours?
No, I just
got it. She stole it back.
Okay, I've got that down.
Okay. Is the 8.6 entire room, is that like standard entire room stuff?
Yep.
Okay. Does anybody have an issue with the signature lines? They're too short. Can we make them longer? I think that's up to the exhibits.
Okay. How do you want to? Do you guys have a one? What do you guys want to get rid of all of Exhibit A here and put this one in?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you mind if I introduce that a little bit?
Yes, I was just gonna say that. Good idea.
Yeah. So it's kind of a little bit what we were talking about earlier, that you know we had that question of how to define the fire chief. Is he an employee? Is he a contractor? Is he a consultant? And you'd ask me to check on that, and then additionally on the wind-up period. And so Richard was pretty busy, so I left him a message, and then I'd emailed him. He called me when I was driving home around 6:30. And as we talked it over, it seemed evident that there were some issues with this exhibit, because I'm not sure how in-depth we want to go. We've got 10 minutes, but essentially the bottom line is we needed to clarify not just the role of the fire chief, but also the role of Carl. And so I scheduled a meeting. I called Michael and Carl, and we scheduled a meeting with Richard for this morning. And Michael asked Rebecca to come because she was on the steering committee and worked on this contract. So we talked.
We being Richard and all
Richard and, right. And the four of us, and worked on some language for this. So that's what you've got in front of you. That's, and then later we had Norvin come in and looked at it briefly.
That's this.
So that's this thing.
10-16.
And the hope is
contracted services.
The hope is that it clarifies somewhat the relationship between the board and the fire district, and also between the fire chief and the EMS chief. One notable change is that we don't want to have to change Carl's contract. We don't want to change what Carl's doing right now. We're sort of adding an extra layer of things that helps us move towards integration, but we want to keep Carl where he's at, and Carl is an employee of the district. He will not be an employee of the fire district. And the last draft sort of implied that Carl would be an assistant chief to the fire district, and that's not really what your intentions seem to be. Your intentions seem to be that you wanted Carl to remain an employee of the district, keep the contract with Carl, but add this additional layer of participation from Norvin as the agency moves towards integration. Is that broadly accurate, Chief mm-hmm. Kutzing? I don't know how much more you want to address
this, but that's pretty much it. Because again, we wanted to ensure the independence of each government agency, namely the fire district and the public hospital district. We do that without bringing on an additional employee,
correct,
or changing the terms of my contract. I'm still responsible for those duties as outlined in my interagency contract. But we add the layer that helps us move towards integration, which is the bottom line behind this. Working on, you know, a financial overview, you know, policies and procedures overview that helps us get to that point when we're ready. You know, when all the other pieces are in place, the licensing, knowing how we're going to fund this, all those other pieces, that it becomes smooth and we're actually working toward it instead of at cross purposes. So, not that I think we were ever working at cross purposes, but maybe parallel tracks where we can actually be working on convergent tracks. I think that helps us. And the other thing that would go with that, and it also helps to maintain the integrity of the contract with the collective bargaining unit right now, because none of the terms change, because it's still within the PhD, executed by the PhD, with their chief administering the terms of that collective bargaining agreement. So we've not changed anything that way. And it was our thought that this revised exhibit better explain that. And to go along with that, you'll notice that just at the end, we figured that when we go back to section 1.1.1, which was implementation, I believe.
Correct.
Right, it would be the purpose and duration. We would add under 1.1, we'd include another subsection, 1.1.1, which states nothing in this interlocal agreement shall supersede the interim EMS chief contract.
So we expect Primera, likewise, folks to arrive here in just 3 or 4 minutes. That's number one. Number two, in the interest of time and level of preparedness, frankly, I think we should defer selling out on the EMS's 2020 budget until that Monday of next week. We discuss that, Chief, and call another special meeting. That said, it'll also allow us to make close to a final draft on this. Right now, there's significant disparities between the new Exhibit A and the draft contract. We need to clear that up, use the same phraseology, strike internal consistency, and that will help us a lot. And then we can look at it with some just that consistency and revisit it. And it'll also give you folks a chance to scrutinize Exhibit A as it currently reads.
So I'm going to do that when?
Monday morning, late morning.
So after we hear from LifeWise?
Well we're going to hear the PhD's 2020 budget.
Okay.
So we're going to be
running. I do have
time.
One thing on this that we should be able to figure out in 30
Absolutely.
Seconds. Under the Peace Health PhD contract, the 47-page Foster Pepper one.
Uh-huh.
And I asked Pam this, and she did meet with the hospital. Whether, and I can't remember quite the sections, I think it was 1.112, 1.123, something, but I have a list of them, whether or not the hospital had any objection to the paramedicine, or it had any objection to this, if this contract is impinging upon them at all, so they won't get caught 3 months from now in the hospital saying, well, you didn't ask us, and we that's in our bailiwick under your contract. And she was going to ask the hospital, she asked Beth, but I said, that's not who we have the contract with. We don't have the contract with Peace Health.
Correct.
And we heard back from Peace Health about that.
And we're going to meet with the representatives of Peace Health this coming Monday, Warren. Chuck Prosper, their new CEO, mm-hmm. has already been given a heads up. Marianne Keene has been in Ireland. She came back, a day or two ago. And so that's on our plate. We'll get a resolution or a reflection from them. You requested that in writing. We requested that as well. So
I did request that in writing. You have to cover that
base. That should come very quickly next week.
All of a sudden now if that happens, we throw a third party in on this, and it's real confusing.
And again, I am not familiar with the terms of that contract at all, but anecdotally.
But Pam would know
right.
the status of it.
But anecdotally, I can say that as Lainey has been working her community paramedicine program, she's in direct concert with Peace Island and working with them. So
all I want is the letter.
Understood.
So 3 years from now, when this conversation is long forgotten and half of us are dead, because we're getting old.
Wait a second.
Only half of us. The other half of us are still alive. Personal. We just had a birthday.
So Monday at what was the time that we struck?
It was 10:30.
10:30 Monday. Continuation of the.
We got some seats up here. We need a workshop for EMS specifically. Was it 10?